This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that time, Prior Faithful. Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Here's your host, Ben Higgins.
Well, here we are, Padres fans, a little over 24 hours away from what will be, one way or another, one of the most consequential games in the history of the San Diego Padres, a Game 5 against the Los Angeles Dodgers in the National League Division Series. Welcome into our commercial-free Padres Roundtable brought to you by Roundtable Pizza. It is Pizza Royalty. I am joined by almost all of the crew today. Tony Gwynn Jr., of course, went up with the team to Los Angeles for the game, but we've got Annie Heilbrun.
Good morning.
At the end from Annie and Elston. Stephen Woods next to Annie.
Hi, Benny.
Craig Elston in the middle, his usual spot.
Present.
Chris Ello back again for a second straight week.
No vacation.
And yours truly. Well, obviously, it would have been nicer to come in having clinched the series last night, and we'd be looking ahead to an NLCS against the Mets, but that is not the story. The story is a Padres offense that has suddenly gone cold over the last 2 days at Petco Park, only scoring in one of the 17 innings in which they came to the plate, and not scoring in any of the last 15 innings in which they stepped to the plate. So, Annie, what do you diagnose as the Padres' offensive difficulties and some of the root causes here?
I think it's baseball. They were better, slightly better against relievers during the regular season than they were the starting rotation. They have been better against the starters in the postseason, but they're seeing better arms in the coming out of the bullpen. So, to me, this is an offense that knows how to hit. They know how to score runs. They got to figure that out by Friday, yes, but I don't think that it's a chronic problem for them.
Woods, is it more of who the Dodgers are throwing at them, or do you think some Padres offensive guys truly are struggling?
Yeah, I think you don't like what you're seeing out of the top, certainly with Luis Arraez. I mean, he's hitting fly balls, and it's funny, man, because when he hits a fly ball, you know, he puts a beautiful swing on it, and it goes nowhere, because I think he swings the bat like 68 miles an hour when he does it. But it just doesn't go anywhere. And if he's not setting the table, it just makes it harder to scratch out those runs. He really is he needs to be more of an igniter at the top, or not be at the top.
Craig, how do you view the Padres' offensive difficulties the last couple of days? Do we agree that they are offensive difficulties?
Well, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And throughout the playoffs, the Padres have not scored once the starter leaves the game. They've had a great game plan against the starting pitchers. I think they've rolled the, you know, had really good luck rolling the dice in terms of who they've gotten. They didn't have to see Sale, you know, so on and so forth. But the Dodgers bullpen is good. It's deep. It's varied. And last night, in one of the best managed games I've ever seen, Dave Roberts completely outmanaged Mike Schilt, ran circles around him, honestly, running in the right reliever at the right time. And the lineup was set up to give him perfect lanes to navigate, and he navigated it. So it's on the Padres to make an adjustment.
Let me follow up with you there, Craig. You said Dave Roberts outmanaged Mike Schilt. I think Dave Roberts managed a heck of a game. Where do you feel like Mike Schilt went wrong in that game?
Well, right at the start, of course. You should never start a starter on 3 days rest unless you absolutely have to. It's a losing strategy in Major League Baseball. It's proven over almost three decades of data since the wild card era. And especially in the modern game where pitchers aren't stretch out to throw 275 innings, don't start every 4 days. It's a drastic, drastic departure. But I'm sure it's going to come up later, too, but you can't overload your lineup in a bullpen day to give the opposing manager a straightforward lane to say, first I make the move here, then I make the move there. And those were like blinking signs. Put in the lefty here, put in the righty there, and it was used to perfection.
We'll get back to Dylan Cease in just a second. Chris, I want to give you a chance to talk about the Padres' offense, the lack of runs other than one inning over the past 2 days.
Yeah, I just put some numbers on what Craig said. Of the 30 runs they've scored in the postseason, 23 have been against starters. So, you know, they've done nothing. And, you know, maybe they're spending a little too much time prepping for the starter and not, you know, able to put together the right game plan for a reliever. But I think ultimately it comes down to what Annie said. This is baseball. You're facing really good pitchers. It's not like the Padres were completely wiped out last night. They had 8 left on base. They had some opportunities. A couple of big hits could have changed that game around. It did not happen. Similar to game one when they had some chances at the end and it did not happen. So, you know, it's going to come down to, you know, somebody hitting a long ball in game five and coming up with a couple of those hits. So, yeah, but this is Dodgers, man. They got great bullpen. Padres do too. And, you know, so I'm not shrinking away from that.
Yeah, you know, Sarah pointed out on our show that every Padre other than, I think, Kyle Higashioka had a hard hit ball. They did get 7 hits. They had base runners. And as, you know, someone who watches a little less maybe emotionally attached to these games, he said, I didn't really see any offensive issues. That's just a baseball game where, you know, that happens sometimes. And I go, I guess that's one way to look at it. I truly have been concerned about Jurickson and Profar in the third spot. I think someone tweeted after his at-bat in whether it was the 6th or the 7th inning. Is that like the 38th straight pop-up by Jurickson and Profar? Yeah. And then he came through and actually had a really nice Jurickson swing in his last at-bat and lined one between first and second for a hard hit ball, you know, advancing a runner, something we saw so many times over the course of the year. As a Padres fan, you kind of hope, all right, is that the moment that got him locked in? Is Arraez getting a hit the other way and not hitting a pop-up? And, you know, it was, you know, fumbled a little bit at shortstop, but getting on base there. Is that something that can carry over into the next game? Because those are the two guys that I've had the most offensive concern. But even in this, we're concerned the Padres got shut out. They've scored, until yesterday, at least 4 in every game in the playoffs. They've won 4 of their 6 playoff games. That's a better winning percentage than they had in the regular season, in which they had the second best record in all time. It really just comes down to tomorrow. If they win tomorrow, nothing is wrong in the Padres universe.
Right.
And if they lose tomorrow, everything is a disaster in the Padres universe.
Of course. Of course. I mean, I was just thinking about that today, Woodsy, in terms of like Game 4 NLDS 2024 is either going to be one of the most remembered games in Padres history, or we are going to literally forget it by Saturday.
The minute the last out is recorded, if you know it's Robert Suarez or Tanner Scott, whatever, and you get that last out, you'll never bring it up again. Remember when we should have done this or we should have done that? It'll be over, and you're on to the Mets. And it's the absolute agony and ecstasy of this game that we all love much.
I think we should overreact a little bit more to it. Don't forget, this is the first time the Padres have been shut out since the first game after the All-Star break.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And as soon as that happened, they won, I believe, 7 in a row.
Can we do it again?
All it's going to take is 7 in a row to put us in a really nice position now.
I like
up
that.
Up 2-0 in the series.
That's right.
I'm here for you. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So, Craig, you mentioned Dylan Cease. You were a vociferous before game 4 that it was not a good idea to start him on short rest. And clearly it didn't work out for the Padres. However, Annie, do you think that Dylan Cease's struggles had to do with the short rest, or is he just someone who has not performed well in big games, and if they had waited until tomorrow and started him, is it perhaps would have been an even worse time to see Dylan Cease struggling in a game 5?
I mean, who can tell? It's hard to tell, right? Could it have been the 3 days? Only he might know that, or maybe he doesn't even know that. Maybe he isn't even sure because he's never done it before in his career. He had the velocity. I mean, he was definitely throwing hard. He just didn't have the command. And that is sometimes a sign of arm fatigue or whatnot. But it was interesting to me. It was an interesting choice because you have a risk with the 3 days for sure. You know he didn't have his best start on Saturday against the Dodgers. They touched him then, got to him last night. He said after the game, he only really didn't like one pitch. You know, he thought he threw pretty well beyond that. So I think it was a tough position for him to be put in. At the same time, he wanted it.
Yeah.
I had said all week I thought you'd go with Martin Perez, and the reasons being that he's got the postseason experience, he has won a World Series, he's a veteran. You let him go out there, you let him try to at least get through a few innings, and then you kind of structure a bullpen game maybe kind of similarly to what the Dodgers did. You're working your high-leverage relievers in and out of the game. But I know that's easier for said than done. And look, the Dodgers are really good against lefties. So there's reasons probably why they didn't want to go that route. But they had to make a decision here with what they were going to do, and they had to kind of ride with it.
Well, and the offense really bailed Dylan Cease and Mike Schilt out.
100%.
They absolutely 100%.
You can change that decision, but the offense didn't score, so who cares?
Sandy Koufax on the mound, Tom Seaver on the mound,
right.
Madison Bumgarner in his prime.
Exactly.
You know, like they bailed both of those guys out.
If you can't get a run across the board, it doesn't. It's moot.
I'll say a couple things about Dylan Cease. Number one, I do like the fact that he, you know, if we believe the stories that we heard, went to Schilt and said, "Give me the ball. I want that." Right. I like that. I like that a lot from my guys on my team. I want that kind of attitude of give it to me. I want it, you know? Didn't work out. Sucks. He's not pitched well in the postseason. ERA of 14.40. That's not what you wanted. It's not what you got Dylan Cease for at all. There is something to be said, too, for going out and setting the tone, you know? And when you look up and it's 3-0, you're like, all right, well, there goes the tone.
Thank you.
There goes the tone. The tone is gone. So I think while we can say that they were bailed out by the lack of offense last night, it's also up to the starting pitcher to absolutely set the tone. It just didn't happen.
Craig, we've seen other ace-type pitchers struggle in the postseason. Clayton Kershaw is one who struggled for a long time. You know, great regular season pitcher struggled in the postseason. What do you think in terms of what really was the cause of Dylan, and has been the cause of Dylan Cease's struggles?
You know, it was another thing that used to happen to Clayton Kershaw all the time in his early playoff career. They'd throw him on 3 days rest when he hadn't thrown on 3 days rest all year, and then he'd get hammered in a game, and then people said, well, this guy stinks. It's like one of the worst strategic decisions that you can see coming from a mile away. I talk about this all the time, and I've said it to everyone so they, you know, to make sure that you know that I'm not second guessing. Like, if the Dodgers had started Yamo on 3 days rest, I would have been waving the flag saying the exact same thing. If I saw the Mets or the Phillies make that move, I'd say the exact same thing. It's a panic move. It's taking one of your strong things and making it weaker. Having said that, Dylan Cease, I think it's a bad matchup with the LA Dodgers.
Yeah.
Because he is a guy that does not have elite command. He has elite stuff. He demands chase. That's how he wins, is with chase. And he threw maybe 3 effective sliders in his 2 appearances to the Dodgers over this time because they don't chase out of the zone. And when he's not hitting the zone and he's not tunneling properly at the top of the zone, he's going to have a hard time succeeding.
Can I also say he's made more starts than anyone in the big leagues? He's threw more pitches than I think all but 2 pitchers or something. He's top 10 in innings pitched. Like, he has done a lot for this team.
Sure.
There might be a little bit there, too, of just...
Well, and they've seen him. You know, they've seen him. They've had success against him. So,
can we agree, though, that Martin Perez is not, as Annie said, he's not a good matchup against the Dodgers?
No,
he's not at all.
But they haven't seen him
that this series, you know.
Batting 397 off him, OPS 1100, you know.
One start, that meaningless start on Thursday. The psychological reason I don't like this move so much goes beyond the math. It's that you're telling a member of your starting staff who you've believed in that this guy over here who's tired is a better call than you.
But psychologically,
you definitely aren't trusting the guy anymore. I mean, they didn't use him at all. I don't even know why he's necessarily on the roster. Like, they don't trust him right now.
Psychologically, though, to the other side of that coin is what I was just saying about a guy walking into your office and saying, "I got us. Give me the ball." Didn't work. It sucks. You know, it didn't work. And you see it so much in postseason baseball. Superstars that are no longer superstars when October hits. We've seen it a million times.
And then
times.
You see also guys that maybe aren't the best matchups go out and pitch great games 100%. Or have a great...
Okay, if this is about matchups, then Chris, is maybe it less about Dylan Cease versus Martin Perez and just saying, we want to save our best matchup, Yu Darvish, for Game 5 on a potential Game 5 on Friday. The guy who has had success against the Dodgers, who has the elite command to, you know, battle that lineup, the repertoire to mix it up twice in the same series and face that team. Is it more about just wanting to have saved Darvish for the next game as opposed to anything that had anything to do with Dylan Cease?
Yeah, you read my mind. I mean, and I think you read Mike Schilt's mind, because I think that's what it ultimately came down to. If he didn't use Dylan Cease in Game 4, went with a bullpen day or did something different, and they lost, he would have had to go with Dylan Cease in Game 5. He could not have told Dylan Cease, his ace guy,
"Yeah, man,
you know, we're going to skip you and go with Darvish." I just don't think he could put himself in that position. So he had to roll the dice with Dylan Cease. It backfired. There's absolutely no question about that. I tweeted that out today or last night. And that had backfired, and I got more responses than I've ever got for any tweet in my tweeting career. So I think a lot of people are kind of agreed with me, or either were vehemently disagreed but wanted to respond. But yes, I think they wanted Darvish for Game 5, and this was the only way they could do it.
And it's so funny, too, because when you go to the other team, we talked about it a little bit this morning. They've got Yamamoto on regular rest, like he's in, and in fact their rest is one more day. He's got it. He's ready to go. Dave Roberts will not get crushed in the media tomorrow or Saturday if they end up losing that game if you don't start Yamamoto. I think Mike Schilt would have potentially, maybe, right, if you start Dylan Cease, who just didn't pitch well in Dodger Stadium. It's a weird situation. $325 million for a player, and Dodger fans are going, "Don't start him. Don't start this guy in Game 5. Please do not start him." I think Padres fans, I would have come in here Monday morning and been like, "You got Dylan Cease. What'd you go get Dylan Cease for if it's not for a Game 5, right?"
I'd also like to crush the narrative of the Dodgers who have battled all the injuries. That would have been Joe Musgrove's game.
Yep,
of yesterday.
Sure.
I think everyone would have been supremely comfortable and confident in having Joe Musgrove on the mound yesterday.
It's a big loss.
Padres were only in that situation because of a major injury loss that put them at a disadvantage this time against the LA Dodgers. All right, so great bullpen game by the Dodgers, and a bit unorthodox in how heavily they leaned on some of their later inning guys early in the game. And I wanted to get the panel's thoughts on that, because the Padres do end up going with a bullpen more direction game at some point, you know, if they move on, in another series when Joe's turn comes up again. Annie, would you like to see Mike Schilt go with a similar strategy and see guys like Jason Adam and Tanner Scott in the third and the fourth inning rather than saving them as most managers do, going with the lower leverage guys early and saving the higher leverage guys for later? Dave kind of dumped out, the kitchen sink at the Padres early in that game.
Yeah, and he had them matched up. I mean, he just had them matched up in terms of when is the top of the lineup coming up? When is this guy going to, it really went to plan for him. And, yeah. I think that's what works. So if Mike Schilt went that direction, I have no doubt Mike Schilt would be able to manage that sort of thing. He's shown that he obviously understands matchups and does a good job in the bullpen at managing the bullpen. So I would like to see it. I mean, if it was useful for them.
Yeah, it's the thought of having to manage a game like that makes me sick to my stomach. And the thought of having to watch my manager manage my team makes me sick to my stomach. There was no counterpunch last night for the Padres, right? We all felt it. Like, there was just no counterpunch. Every time you thought, ooh, maybe we can counter. Nope. Perfect guy here, lefty, this arm slot, whatever. Like, it worked out beautifully. If you see the exact same plan again, can you take advantage is the biggest answer. And I think you will. I think you will see could be the exact same.
It worked out so well, Craig, for the Dodgers that you kind of forget about what could happen. I mean, if the Padres had put together a couple of rallies and forced Dave to make extra moves, and it's a close game at the end, and now all of a sudden you're down to Ben Kasparius and some of the back-end guys in the most critical innings to save your season, there is a clear path where that can backfire on you as well.
Well, and you know, it's funny. Up in the stands with my Padres hot tub buddies watching the game from my season seats, you know, we talk about it at the beginning, being all confident, right? Well, it's so hard to win a bullpen game because you have to pitch a perfect game. It, right. It's a chain. It's right. It's a chain, and if one link breaks in the chain, the whole thing falls apart because all you've got a plan for the fourth, the fifth, the sixth. Well, okay, what happens if your third inning guy gets crushed? All of a sudden, it's all out the window. So the dynamic of that remains present, and I'm not going to say if, when the Dodgers do this, in game five, they're going to do the exact same thing. If they don't, they're punting.
Yeah.
They're punting their advantage in the series because they have figured this out. Because the flip of that was by the fourth inning, we're sitting there, the same people, and just looking, just go, they've got this on lock.
It's done.
Right now.
It's
on lock.
We've done these roundtables all year long, and Annie today has decided to raise her hand when she's got a point. All you have to do is give me a knowing look, Annie, and I will definitely call on you.
That's
don't worry
why
about
I'm
it.
Not sure if they will. That's why I'm not sure if they will do another bullpen game.
He knows you, that you knowing
to,
look.
You have to. Everything worked for them last night because you're absolutely right. You have to, every single reliever that comes out of that pen has to be on his game. No one didn't have their stuff last night. And you have to have that happen again on Friday to perfection. I thought Xander made a good point. They didn't work in the zone hardly at all last night. Like they worked on the edges and then went in the zone when they needed to. And the difficulty of painting that and doing the exact same thing. Now, they're very good. I think they might do like part of that.
Like a hybrid.
What's the word I'm looking for?
A hybrid of
thank
of
you.
That.
You know, but if which he is, goes with the exact same thing, I don't know.
Which is, again, you know, the hybrid, they're all hybrids. I mean, the plan can be.
Padres might go with a hybrid, too.
The plan can be the plan. If you go out and you get to Ryan Brazier last night, you're right, man. It's Kasperius and it's those guys. It's the kid that throws 104 that the Padres hit pretty well the other night. But you didn't. They didn't have to do that, and that's the tough part. Mike Schilt's talked all year about being what? Elite adjusters. It's so hard to be an elite adjuster when there's a new arm every single inning, right? But with the same plan in place, you get the feeling that it's going to go the same way. You got to adjust, and we got to see if they're elite adjusters or not. They have one chance to prove it.
I also think, you know, we keep crediting Dave Roberts. We had a brief discussion at the end of the show. You get the sense that the Dodgers, a lot of these instructions are coming from Andrew Friedman and above. And is this going to be a bullpen game? Who's
holistic.
Starting in this game?
It's a holistic approach.
They call it holistic in San Diego.
It's very holistic in San Diego as well.
It is.
Yes.
It's very much in modern baseball. It's not just the Dodgers or the Padres, but it's an analytics department that feeds the front office.
Aaron Boone's getting his info today.
Yeah, that gives information down to the dugout. It's Chris, I know you're kind of shaking your head on it, that there's not a lot of gut managing.
Chris loves analytics.
Any time anymore. I mean, Mike Schilt still,
as
I think,
a straw man,
Mike Schilt still
analytics.
Has a gut, and he's talked about his gut sometimes and what it tells him. I don't know how freely he's allowed to use that gut, but he's got one, and he likes to use it when the mood strikes him.
I just listening to everybody talk about the bullpen day and everything that went into it just makes me a little ill. The whole day.
Why?
The whole day of baseball made me ill. The Tigers did a bullpen game and they got a shutout.
Yep.
The Dodgers did a bullpen day and they got a shutout. If the Dodgers play the Tigers in the World Series and they go seven bullpen games apiece, I think baseball, in my mind, will have blown up forever.
There'll be a new rule by the time next season starts.
It's very possible, and Craig's right, the Dodgers would be idiots not to try the exact same tactic tomorrow night. But I'm going to just cross my fingers that what John Smoltz has said over and over again turns out in Game 5, and that is if you pitch eight different guys, eight different guys have to be good.
Yep.
It only is going to take one to be off, and I'm confident the Padres will find that one, I hope, in game.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
5.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable, presented commercial-free by Roundtable Pizza. It is pizza royalty. All right, you know, second-guessing is obviously a big part of the job that we do. So this question is your second-guessing question. If you could go back and change one decision the Padres have made from the first four games of this series, like one pivotal moment, something you would have liked to have seen them do differently, what do you think is that big moment, Woods, that you want to change? We talked about it a little bit during our show.
Yeah, we did. There were a couple good answers. I won't steal them all. I'll say the Mookie walk 2-2. I kind of understood it after it happened and it was explained to me, but that was the one inning, you know, other than yesterday's game, I thought really kind of got away from Mike Schilt and the Padres. But yeah, I mean, with Mookie Betts, who's not performed until the last couple of games, keep him on the ropes. You got him two strikes. Try to get him. I understood it. It was explained to me after. But I think you change that and see where your fortunes lie. I mean, you know, they got you. They got you that inning, and it was the difference in the game.
Craig, is it as simple for you as not starting Dylan Cease on 3 days rest? Does that change this? Do you think that changes this series at all? You know, because as we said, the offense kind of didn't perform. So would you go back and change that, or would you pick something else?
Oh, no. I mean, absolutely. I would have started Adrian Morahone yesterday.
Yeah.
That would have been.
He looked good too.
That would have been the move, and it would have been our modified bullpen day to go after them. You know, kind of lane by lane by lane, and
even with Teoscar in the three,
yeah,
without Freeman, the gamesmanship that they employed a couple hours before the game.
I still would do it that way. You've still got Muncy right there too.
Yeah.
You know, it is a little different. But then again, they did a little gamesmanship too. So
they did.
You know, but yeah, I mean, if it's a one. I won't try and take two. That'd be the one.
That's the one. Chris, what would you choose to change?
I would have put Jackson Merrill and Jerickson Profar in the first couple of rows of the outfield for the top of the first inning. Because Mookie Betts is almost guaranteed to hit one just over the fence.
Over the wall.
So let's put an end to that idea. I don't have anything major beyond, you know, I disagreed with the Dylan Cease move. I said so. It's over now. I'm surprised I haven't heard Woodsy say the following phrase. We just got to flush it.
Flush it.
Because I know it's one of his favorites.
It is my favorite.
And that's all you can
do.
It didn't work. It backfired. I haven't had any major problems. It's been four great games. It's gone 2-2. You know, let's just see what happens now. I don't have anything lingering.
Any changes that you would have made?
I really don't. I mean, if someone wants to take mine, go ahead. We talked about the pitching for yesterday, which could have been a change, but at the end of the day, the offense needed a score, so wouldn't have changed the outcome of the game unless maybe it was a tone setter or something like that. But, you know, even the game that they lost in L.A. on Saturday was a close game. It was 7-5, right, yeah. Or something like that. So,
chance to win.
Yeah, so the only one really was yesterday. So if anyone has another one that they want to take, take it.
Somebody in our chat said you Darvish instead of Dylan Cease in game one. I mean, again, you got Dylan Cease for a reason, and it hasn't panned out yet. But, yeah, that's one you could go
back to. It could pan out in a different matchup.
100%.
It could pan out, you know, in the next series.
Yeah.
If the Padres get there.
If you get there.
Cease can be a great asset.
Well, we can't go anywhere without him. You know, we can't go anywhere
without
him.
You're not going to win the World Series if he pitches to a 14 ERA.
No, you have no chance.
Especially with Joe Musgrove out.
Correct.
Can win. Obviously, you only need to win 4 out of 7 in a championship or a World Series, and you can have a pitcher not perform and still win that series.
Sure.
But when you lose a starter like Joe, and if you have a Dylan Cease who's not performing, you can't expect Michael King and Yu Darvish to be essentially perfect then for their four games.
And now you got to go to Martin Perez and say, I trust you now.
That's what makes this matchup. I mean, a really good matchup because the Dodgers are in that position.
Yeah.
They've got Yoshinobu Yamamoto and Jack Flaherty, neither of which I think they really even trust. And
That's right.
You know, so it's kind of backs up against the wall.
It's
a literal must-win game.
Ben did the
We finally got to the must-win.
Finally got a legit must-win. Our first of the season. Benny got to
it
the
really
odds.
Is. It's the first.
Benny got to the odds this morning on Fangraphs that it was
50.5
to 49.5.
Yeah.
It's the closest thing that you've ever seen.
And the World Series odds are like 19% Dodgers, 18% Padres.
I mean, we're right there.
We could all flip 5 coins and just play it all out right here with a penny, a nickel, a dime, and a quarter and figure out how this series is going to go. A lot of people pointed out when I brought this up during our show, more walks to Shohei Ohtani. Don't let him beat you. And honestly, I think the Padres have done an incredible job against Shohei Ohtani this series. He is hitting .250 with a .333 on base percentage and a .771 OPS.
That's a dream.
That to me is called containing Shohei Ohtani as well as any team.
Seven Ks.
Has contained him all season long.
Correct.
The plan against Shohei Ohtani has worked, with the exception of one giant three-run home run in his very first at-bat.
Get Gavin Lux out. What's the plan for Gavin Lux? You know what I mean? That's the plan you need to be worried about.
They have attacked him really well, Chris, and that plan has been a good one.
Yeah, I disagree with anybody who says walk him more. All of his hits have been when two runners are on base. He's 3-for-3. The three at-bats, he's come up with two runners on base.
Two of his hits are shattered bat, you know, floaters in the center field, too.
Right, yeah, you can't walk him in those circumstances.
You can't walk him.
And so on the times when I think people are saying walk him, don't forget, if you walk him and second base is empty, he's going to be on second, and he might even take third. So I don't think you can walk him, and I don't think there's been a situation to necessarily pitch around him because, you know, the hits he's gotten, there's been really no place to put him.
Craig, the plan on Shohei Ohtani, you agree, has been the correct one from the Padres?
Well, yeah, and, you know, after game one, the thing that I walked away from that game saying was, in a situation where he can beat you, if it's your starting pitcher on the mound, given the guys who we have, I don't want them to let Shohei beat him. And since that game, game one, Shohei didn't come up in that situation again until last night.
Right.
His at-bat against Cease the second time around.
Secondly.
And, of course, we faced him, and he got a hit.
Single, yeah.
And he got a hit, and he got a run batted in. So you just don't want to let the field be set up for him to eat. And that's why stopping the 7-8-9 of the Dodgers, and really the 6-7-8-9 of the Dodgers, is the single most important thing for the Padres staff.
Yeah, they've done a great job against him, and I think that it goes with Mike Schilt's mantra of like not backing down, not being afraid. However, the big part, making sure that they don't allow the runners ahead of him or the bottom of the order to get on base, and so they've done a good job kind of containing both of those. But yeah, I mean, look, they've contained Shohei for sure.
It's our Padres Roundtable, brought to you by Roundtable Pizza. It is pizza royalty. We'll get back to Padres Dodgers in just a second. I want to mention the rest of the playoffs quickly and throw the question out in the American League. Which team do you feel the Guardians or the Yankees or the Guardians or the Royals has a better chance of rallying back from a 2-1 deficit? Do you see either of that happening? And kind of how do you envision those series playing out, Chris, based on what you see in the first three games?
I don't envision either rallying. The Guardians haven't scored for two games, and I think the Tigers might still have a few innings of Scooble left for game five if they need it.
Oh, yeah.
So I definitely don't see the Royals coming back. You know, I like how it's setting up. You know, I know we're all really down and out, and we should be today. It was a horrible party last night, one of the worst I've been to in a while. You know, but if the Padres...
Was it catered by Spiro?
No,
or anything?
I don't think so. No, or Roundtable. But yeah, I think if the Padres can advance, you know, I think we're going to have a good chance at a World Series rematch against either the Tigers or Yankees. I think both will advance.
Craig, how do you see the American League playing out?
Just the exact same way that Chris said it, except I think the Yankees have just a garden path to the World Series. I truly do. I think the Yankees are going to be in the World Series. It's almost like...
It does.
Fast forward.
It does feel like the Tigers are on borrowed time every series, but I can't deny they're in a great spot now. They got a home game and a Scooble game, and they only have to win one of them now to beat what I think is a superior Guardians team in almost every way, other than ace pitcher. But they just haven't been able to get it done in this series, Woods. And if I'm a Cleveland fan, I'm really frustrated here because the path was there for your team to make a run this year, and you haven't been able to do it against a team you should have been favored to beat.
Yeah, and you kind of pencil in two losses to Scooble, right? All right, we lose two games. We got to win these other three. You got to figure out a way to win those.
They had a chance to win the first one.
They did.
They kept it close with good pitching.
They did. And, Boyd was fantastic in that game. And as far as the Yankees-Royals goes, Royals are—I would not say they're down and out yet. They hit Cole really well the other day, and they got Cole today. It's not been the same type of big game guy. Aaron Judge has disappeared? I mean, again, we were talking about superstars in the playoffs. It's like, how in the world? How in the world does this happen? But it's just, it's a different animal. Yeah. Not everybody's wired for it.
Danny, I do think the Royals have the better chance of coming back. I mean, if it weren't for Giancarlo Stanton,
yeah.
You know, this might be a very Royals-centric series at this point. He's kind of stepped up in Judge not getting things done and got these Yankees to the brink of the ALCS.
Yeah, I think with the Yankees, it's hard because you know at any time they can ignite,
yes.
And then they can be very dangerous, or at least dangerous enough to forge that path into the World Series. I would love to see the Royals. I would love to see the Tigers. Heck, I would even love to see, you know, I mean, any of those guys make it, you know, in terms of going the distance. If the Tigers did it and they did it so unconventionally, I mean, it would turn baseball upside down.
Yep.
Meanwhile, in the National League, we already know the other team in the NLCS. It is the New York Mets. So not knowing whether it's going to be the Padres or the Dodgers, how do you analyze the Mets and their chances, Chris, of now, you know, making an improbable World Series run based on what you've seen and them taking out the Phillies in four games?
Recent history tells us they're a lock to make the World Series. They would be the third consecutive number six seed.
Correct.
To make the World Series out of the National League. That's unheard of.
Yeah, so what was the stat? Every team that's ever eliminated the Brewers in the playoffs,
they go to the World Series.
That's another one.
It's like having Chris Martin on your team. It guarantees you to go to the World Series.
Yeah.
Padres would like a word.
That is a remarkable stat, but I put more stock in the number six seed, you know, gaining momentum. With the Mets beating the Phillies yesterday, and we can only hope this continues for one more day, National League division champions are 0-8 in playoff series the last 3 years. Not a single one has won a single series, and the Padres need to keep it that way. Now, having said that, I saw the Mets coming, and I think we all did a little bit in the last few weeks of the season. They have had a bit of a magic about them, similar to what I've seen from the Padres all season long. And they have a one guy show in Francisco Lindor that is, he's absolutely uncanny at the moment, right? Hit the home run to get them into the playoffs against Atlanta in the doubleheader in the ninth inning, grand slam yesterday. He's been doing it all year. But I'm not concerned about the Mets because I'm not scared of any of their starting pitchers. And the Padres have shown the ability to jump on these guys early. And I think that would be the way that series might play out.
Annie, as good as Lindor is, you know, you kind of expect him to get some hits, just like you do with Ohtani. You're not going to contain him completely. I think it's Pete Alonso all of a sudden coming up with, finally, after not a good season, with huge hits. The three-run home run in the ninth inning to win the wild card. Yeah. He got him started with a home run in game three, I think it was, in that win as well. I mean, that's huge that Lindor is actually getting some support from Alonso now.
Right, and Alonso has found a playoff pumpkin that he carries with him, so maybe that's adding to it. But, no, I mean, look, for him to get hot at this time, which – who saw that coming really necessarily, for sure is helping out this team and giving them also a little bit of extra mojo. And it's very similar, I think, to the Padres. And listen, with the Phillies losing, if the Dodgers lost, we're about to get inundated with articles and talk about changing the playoff structure and what's going on and everything. But if the Padres can advance and face the Mets, I agree. It's like the magical series. It's the magical matchup. I don't know how the Mets are doing it. You know, the Phillies get cold in the postseason. We saw that last year also with the Diamondbacks. And the Mets have been able to ride this wave. But it's not like their pitching is – they have good pitching. But look, I mean, Edwin Diaz, every time he gets out there to close out a game, you're holding your breath, right?
100%.
Or he's going to be able to do it. So I think it's going to be a really darn good matchup if the two teams face each other.
Yeah, the pumpkin, Grimace.
Talk
to a girl.
Lindor hitting that huge grand slam and just dropping his bat.
Dropping the bat.
And
cold
running
as ice.
Around, cold as ice. Like,
cold
I
as
love
ice.
Guys showing. I don't mind at all. I think it's fun when they pump their fists and they go to the clubhouse and have a good time. But that was an old school trot around the bases.
I'm not mad about Lindor going old school. What drives me crazy is the 19 old school analysts who I wish everyone would do it the way
Lindor.
He doesn't celebrate at all.
Were you listening to me when that happened?
Chipper Jones yesterday was like, oh my God, he didn't even flip his bat. This is the greatest.
No, I'm not saying that. I like what the Padres do.
I think the Mets, though, also, you know, you don't the guys who are really key to them, you don't hear as much about David Peterson and what he has done, you know, flexibility out of, you know, pitching, you
starting,
can start,
closing,
he can relief, he can come in late. He has been one of the most valuable players in the postseason with what he's done. I don't think a ton of people even talk about David Peterson. I agree. Edwin Diaz shouldn't scare the Padres at all if they face him. They've had success against Edwin Diaz. But David Peterson kind of scares me if the Padres do end up playing the Mets.
Yeah, there's a bunch of guys. They're a good team. I said it this morning. I don't think it's even fair to categorize them as devil magic right now, the way that they're playing. They're just playing good, solid, fundamental baseball at the absolutely most brilliant time of year to do so. It's not like they don't have stars. It's not like they're not the number one payroll in baseball. They are. I think the Dodgers are close second. But it's, I mean, they're getting hot at the right time. We talk about it every year.
The renaissance of Sean Manaea.
Yeah,
well,
my gosh.
That's where I wanted to go.
I'm going to hit the head, Ben.
There's... okay, bye.
when you got to go, you got to go.
There's a misconception as to...
I'd like to go.
Can we all leave?
They'll be back.
I'll go and leave Craig sitting up here.
So let me tell you about Sean Manaea for a couple of minutes.
Believe me, we could not do a commercial-free Ben and Woods show. He can't make it an hour usually. I'm surprised he always does every round
this
table.
Is like the first time. But regardless, Quintana, Manaea, Peterson...
These are lefties
that have me thinking. And all the way through on the other side of the bracket, Annie and I even talked about it on the show a little bit yesterday. It's like, what do you want? Because obviously you want home field advantage. You want to be the higher seed. All of those things are obvious. The Phillies are a tough team. Like, you don't want to face Bryce Harper and Aaron Nolan, Zach Wheeler, et cetera, et cetera. But the Phillies haven't played well for 2.5 months. The Mets have played well for 4 straight months. It was beginning of June. Since then, they've had the best record in baseball.
Yeah, I wanted home field advantage, but I wanted the Mets to be forced to a game five and be a little tired from cross-country travel. Now, I don't know what their plan is, but I would imagine fly to Orange County and then wait and go either south or north, depending on who wins the game, as opposed to waiting until late Friday night to take a red eye and come early. I'd get out here as soon as possible if I was the Mets.
They're a sneaky, loose team, too. When they were in San Diego, they're very loose. They're, you know, they have their Oh My God song. They have their groom. Like, they're just
another
But they're just a fun kind of, you know, kind of another edgy team, just kind of like the Padres, where they have fun, they play. So it's going to be a good matchup if the two face each other.
They can all come out here and stay at Jeff McNeil's place. Didn't he go to Long Beach State? Yeah,
he did go to Long Beach State.
And remember, he has been working out in Arizona, and the word, he hasn't played for a while, right? A month.
Wrist injury. They thought it was a season ender because they thought their season was soon to be over.
Right. They're thinking he could be back for the championship series. So.
All right, seventh inning stretch time now that Woods has returned.
Thank you.
I think
sorry
this
about
is
that.
A great Woods question, actually. So I think we all feel the stress of watching playoff games as fans. I know most Padres fans, you're going to experience it more than once tomorrow night. We're only human. So what is your favorite stress-relieving activity?
During a game anytime?
Just anytime. What do you find that best relieves your stress, Chris?
I'm going to go with, and my wife loves this, I'm going to go with cleaning the house.
Cleaning the house.
That's a good one.
Just walking around.
Nervous energy. Just get it all.
Nervous energy. Productive. Exactly. Nervous energy, washing the dishes, cleaning up, straightening up. You know, before the advent of the DVR, when I used to watch games live, and the NBA especially, with all the lengthy timeouts, the house used to be spick and span by the end of a big game. So I'll go with that.
Woods, have you broken into your playoff pack yet?
I have not.
Okay.
Not yet.
Woods, if you don't know, bought a pack of Marlboros before the playoffs.
Mucho stress.
The playoff pack. Mucho stress.
Don Stanhouse now?
I don't know
if he knows who that is.
They're in my side drawer. I'm comforted knowing that they're there. For me, what it is music. And what I'll do is I'll just go on a deep dive into Spotify, and I'll start discovering new bands that I'll then research and connect, and it's just this big, long process. And usually Friday nights were always my night. You know, long week, talking about the team. You watch the Friday night game, and then I would get very musical until about midnight, 1 in the morning every Friday. But I find myself now, after the games, delving into a lot of music, so try to learn some new stuff.
Annie, what's your stress relief technique?
I like to break things.
Rage room? Have you ever been to a rage room?
Yeah.
What are you, Walker Bueller?
I just like to run around and break things. I have a little room where I just... No, I'm just kidding. No, I like to go for a walk or a run or something like that. Like, I gotta get out of the house and, like, do something. Yeah, like... Take the nervous energy out of my body. Exactly.
Snacking is a big one, too.
Yeah, I was going to say stress eating.
Oh, God, stress eating is so dangerous. So dangerous. In fact, yesterday, bless him, Bobby Cressy came by our seats, and he dropped off some of the pizza that was in the press box. And here's my answer, is pacing. It's like, I've been watching these games mostly at Bottle Rocket, and I'm basically a loose radical in the back room, just like floating around, like the ball on Pong without any flipper. Just bing, bong, bing, bong, bing, bouncing
tiger
off the walls. And then when we've got three runners on, walking outside, kind of pacing on the sidewalk, just like the movement. So yesterday, being in my seat and like... trapped, nowhere to go, nowhere to pace. That pizza started coming
wasn't
up pretty
that,
quick for
wasn't
stress
that
eating
horrible
instead.
After, you know, we were at the game the other night, and it was 6-1, and you're like, this is the best. And then the Grand Slam happens at 6-5, and my buddy was in a row in front of me. He goes, every time I look back, you had your head between your legs, and you were chewing on a bottle cap. Every time. So there'd be people standing, they're in there trying to get outs, and I'm like this. I'm looking at the ground going, I paid this much money to sit in. And we were right in the middle of the row, so we couldn't do anything. So I was just in the chamber the whole time.
Well, if I'm trying to be a little healthier and not stress eat, not during a game, I'll do a crossword puzzle and just kind of focus on that.
That's good.
Now, if I'm watching a game by myself, and I've never admitted this to anyone, but when I get nervous or, like, stressed, I kind of flap my arm.
I've seen him do it.
I flap my arms like that. It's the way it feels like it releases that nervous
energy out,
and it looks really, really dorky when I do it. So I try not to do it in front of people, but as you've both seen, that I can't always help it.
I understand. It's
when I get, it just has to get out, like, you know, physically somewhere. Just get that stress.
I feel it. That's me walking around.
You gotta
let it out.
Next time my wife gets on me for biting my nails, I'm gonna say, honey, I could do that.
Or eat butter caps. Yeah, I do.
All right, we got about 10 minutes left here in the round table. Let's look specifically ahead to tomorrow. First of all, if you were Mike Schilt, what would be, if you're even inclined, to be the good old-fashioned shake things up / panic move before game five, the change that you would make ahead?
Are you shaking things up or are you panicking?
Well, if it works,
it's only a shake up.
If it works, it's a good shake up. If it doesn't work, it was a panic move. That's an after the fact characterization.
My shake up would be to give Donovan Solano the start, even though David Peralta's been hot. I think Solano's better in the matchup against a bullpen day.
Yeah.
My panic move would be to take Jerks and Profar out of the three spot and put him eighth.
I like that. One of each.
Yeah.
Craig?
You just took it, and it's what I alluded to earlier. I think it's not even panic or shakeup. It's tactical. Solano needs to be in the lineup. He needs to be hitting eighth in the lineup. Cronenworth needs to hit seventh, and that is to reduce the lane, because yesterday Roberts was able to, starting at five, go, okay, I got Merrills, I fade Bogarts, now I've got two left-handers, then I fade Higashioka, and I've got a rise.
So we talked about it a little bit. If you're going to continue to play Peralta, I haven't understood why wouldn't Jake bat ninth as the reset and put Higashioka as the eighth and split up your lefty-righties at the bottom? I mean, you know, obviously then you go lefty-lefty with Cronenworth and Arise back to the top, but something I consider and something Woods and I talked about was, do you have Fernando Tatis Jr. bat first, like Shohei Ohtani bats first for the Dodgers, just to make sure that if it comes down to one last at-bat with your season on the line in Game 5, and you've got the 8-9-1 hitters coming up in the ninth inning, you want to make sure that you have every chance to get Fernando up as much as possible in that last game. I don't know if that's a shakeup or a panic move, Woods, but...
Well, I mean, look, if I was running the Dodgers, it would look different. I don't know that I'd have Shohei in the one, but it's worked for them tremendously, and it certainly works for him. But their best hitter is one. Our best hitter can be one as well.
I feel like it works for them from an opponent's standpoint. I get nervous when the 7, 8, 9 hitters start coming up because I know Shohei's at one.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't that work the other way as well? If you know Tatis,
what if you had
one,
what if you had a rise in the eight?
Doesn't that make the 7, 8, 9 hitters all a little bit tougher to face?
Yes.
Like a little bit more pressure knowing
with Tatis coming up?
Instead of a rise coming up at one going, yeah, well, if I put two on, the worst is going to happen. He's going to get a single.
And he may hit into a double play.
Yeah, and he may hit into a double play. But if Tatis is coming up, it stresses, I think, the pitcher more at the bottom of the lineup. This is a late, junction.
Stratomatically, I think you are right on to something here. Like, I'm trying to put it together in my mind. So now we're going to move everyone up one, and we're going to pop Luis down to 9. And, geez, he's not hitting, so it makes sense. That would be a panic move. I almost guarantee you that Tatis would be chasing 3 sliders in his first at-bat. And I'm back to exalt the team, accept the result. This is our team.
I like it.
I exalt
I like
them.
That. Exalt
Annie,
the team, accept shake the
result. /panic move for Annie?
Yeah, I think I would just be willing to be unconventional with my pitching if I needed to be. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't exactly even know what that means, but if you, it's a game 5, it's a do or die, you could reset things. I mean, you have the day, you know, you don't have a game the exact day, the next day. So I would be willing to be unconventional with my pitching a little bit.
Tanner Scott in the first inning. That's unconventional.
Yeah. Opener,
right?
Opener, and how about Billy Martin move? Put everybody's name in a hat and draw it out that way.
Get ejected from the first inning, my shield out there.
Kick a little dirt on the umpire. See where that gets you.
All right. Last question here, if we can spend the last 5 or 6 minutes bouncing it around. Obviously, someone is going to step up on one or both teams in Game 5, and you know their name will be written in playoff lore. Who is your pick to click in Game 5 of the National League Division Series, and why? You can obviously choose anyone from any team. I'm expecting a lot of Padres picks from this panel. No one's going to be mad.
I really hope Teoscar goes off in Game 5.
Well, right? This is Shohei guy.
My pick to click is Tommy Edman.
Image come up.
So I'm thinking more Padres selections here, Annie.
I'm going to go with Fernando Tatis Jr. You know, he's an easy pick, obviously, because of what he's been doing this postseason. He's just been absolutely electric. And then he does well in Dodger Stadium. This is going to be an environment where, coming off of all the drama that they played with on Sunday and the fans there, what's it going to be like for them? And I think that he's going to go out there and, as best as he can, you know, make sure that they realize that he's not backing down. So I'm going to go with him.
Woods, I know if you're picking with your heart, I know who you want to be the guy who sticks it to the Dodgers tomorrow.
I may surprise you. I want Jerks and Profar to bring me their heads.
Not
that's
the guy
what
whose
I
jersey
want.
You just bought this week?
Yeah, man. I want Jerkson, who's not playing well. Man, he's not either. But I want Jerkson to bring me their hearts on a plate. That's what I want. And I think if one thing – they'll be pissed if it's Manny. They'll be real pissed if it's Jerkson. Yeah.
There's so many sweet possibilities here,
right?
Yeah.
That's right. Is this a draft?
No, you can pick someone who's
because I was going to pick Profar along the lines of he has been Mr. Relevant all year, and he's not been relevant this series outside of the catch, and like this would be that time. Like, he's come through in every big moment. But seeing as the other two, I'm going to just say Manny. I mean, it's Manny because it's Manny.
Yeah. With the storylines of the series, you know, after the ball gate and everything, if Manny were to come and stick it to the Dodgers.
Would be
in Game 5 and that in Dodger Stadium with that fan base that really has an irrational loathing of him.
Did you hear Kershaw last night? They interviewed Clayton Kershaw after the game, and they said, what do you expect in Game 5 from your fan base? He goes, I hope we don't have any, you know, distractions and delays. He said, and how do you think Manny's going to be received? And he goes, like he always is, he's going to get booed, and he's probably going to like it. It was really good. It was a good answer by Clayton.
Over under on whether he tosses a ball over to their dugout. What camera
absurdly,
will be focused on that?
He's going to do it because he wants to. It's going to be absurdly lightly. Maybe like the gentlest of
like
underhand tosses if he ever has to do it.
I think
it.
You got to try to get back under their skin a little bit. It clearly works for you, and it clearly bothers them. But I think we definitely have a couple guys that can do it.
Chris, pick to click. You got someone new
for us? Yeah, I do. First of all, I think we have certainly duly reacted to an 8-0 loss the way you would expect. But personally, and I think this goes for everyone, but I have the utmost confidence the Padres are going to go up there and win this game. I still think they're the better team, and I know it didn't look like it last night, but I'm going to lean on the fact that this is our time. And I do believe the Padres are going to win this game tomorrow night.
I like it.
Having said that, my pick to click is using a little what Craig's Dodger strategy against them. And if they go left-hander for 5, 6, 7, 8, the way the Padres lineup is constructed, the one righty who gets a swing there is Xander Bogaerts.
Love it.
I'll take him.
All right. I like the analytics behind that one. I thought this over because I wanted to pick someone different from everybody else. No one's picked a pitcher. I mean, Yu Darvish is an obvious selection.
For sure.
As a pick to click. But I tend to think that someone's going to have a big swing. I thought, boy, it would be poetic if Jake Cronenworth. I thought last night would be the real poetic night for Jake Cronenworth to come through. He never really had the opportunity. It would still be pretty poetic in Game 5. But who has been the catalyst, ultimately, when the Padres have needed a lift and a burst of energy all season long with his youthful exuberance, his unbelievable confidence, and what he's done with this team? I think Jackson Merrill will be my pick to click.
Let's go.
In Game 5 of the National League Division Series. He's already started writing his legend. Why not start writing the postseason legend? I mean, he had a home run earlier in this series at Dodger Stadium. Why not do it again? He seems to thrive under the most pressure-packed of circumstances, and this is going to be the most pressure-packed circumstance he's faced so far in his big league career. I'll take Jackson
Merrill.
You know
what's cool is when you said that, the guy that has carried this team and has sparked us so many times, my mind went, all right. Tatis, Machado, like every single dude on this team has done it. Higgy, they've all done it. It could have been 1 through 9, Benny, of this team that you listed. Man, it's crazy.
All right. Well, if we are back here next Thursday for another roundtable, that will be a very good sign. It would probably come before Game 4 of the National League Championship Series in New York against the Mets. We could be 3-0. We could be 2-1. I hope that we talk to you again next Thursday. Obviously, all of our regular shows will be continuing until then, including Annie and Elston coming up live next year on 97.3 The Fan. And don't forget, tomorrow, tune in. 3:08, I believe, is the EcoWater SoCal pregame show. Is it a 4:08?
4:08 first pitch.
4:08 pregame show. 5:08 first pitch?
5:08.
Oh, okay. I thought it was 4:08.
Hopefully they go 5:09.
5:08 first pitch.
In the Fox TV way to put it, Ben, it is currently 32 hours before Shohei Ohtani bats next.
We're talking Greenwich Mean Time here. All right, well, just check local listings. Thank you for joining us all season long. Thank you to Roundtable Pizza. It's Pizza Royalty for bringing us these commercial-free every single week. For Annie, for Woodsy, for Craig, for Chris, I'm Ben. Have a great rest of your Thursday from all of us here at 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody, and go Padres.
Woo. Come on.
Up the dads.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.